so critically acclaimed.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Not So Critically Acclaimed podcast. I'm Laura, and it's finally time to discuss the details of my new favorite show, Cruel Summer. And we're just going to jump right in and start with the finale. So I honestly didn't really know what I expected to happen or what I wanted to see happen. For me, I always enjoyed the episodes from Jeanette's perspective more than the ones from Kate's perspective, which I think was an unpopular opinion because I would always read people's reactions on like TV Time of Cruel Summer, and they would always say like how they liked Kate's episodes more and stuff. And I was like, really? I always liked Jeanette's. And I don't know why. Like, I felt like we got more pieces of the story when the episodes were from Jeanette's perspective. And it was also easier to follow because you could see which years were which. Like, they were so harshly, like, I don't know how to describe it, but like, Jeanette had the curly hair in 93, straight hair in 94, and then the horrible haircut in 95. Whereas Kate in 94 and 95, I would get confused sometimes. So I think it was a little bit more difficult. But anyway, with that being said, part of me then wanted to, like, Jeanette to be the one wronged in this whole situation, mainly because I liked 94 Jeanette and I kind of fell for her. Like, as far as we knew, she did nothing wrong and is getting like her whole new life and the respect of her name like stripped from her. And then by 95, she's a town outcast, and it seems like, I don't know, I wanted to see her innocent. At the same time, 93 Jeanette was totally a creep. Like, every time she got a rush from sneaking into Martin Harris's house and like having that thrill of potentially getting in trouble but then not, she always had this really creepy smile on her face, and it was really weird. And so that, of course, then brings us to the finale. And at the end of the day, we learned that the main turn of events from Kate's perspective all went down on Christmas Eve when she saw Jeanette break into the house and assumed that's who saw her on the bike outside, but of course it ended up being Mallory. And this was just so spectacular how they put the details together. From the snow globe breathing message on Jamie's phone that Jeanette heard, to then Kate hearing the card on the bike, which was, if you remember, one of the very first clips early on in the show. They like focused in on the card hitting against the bike. I think it was like the first episode. And I only distinctly remember this because I was filming a TikTok of the scene that happened right after that little close-up of the card. And it was when they were singing like that song, My Grandma and Your Grandma Sitting by the Fire and all that. And so I made a TikTok about that. If you haven't seen it, I was basically freaking out because I heard them singing that song and was like, oh my God, it's a TikTok song, you know, my best friend and your best friend and all that. And like, before you jump down my throat like some people did, yes, I am aware that the song existed beforehand, and like most TikTok songs come from somewhere else, but it was just fun to hear it on Cruel Summer because, you know, it was out of context. It was out of TikTok context and fun to see it like that. And the second reason, it was super eerie because of the timing. That episode that featured the song aired right when the song was trending on TikTok. And that was just scary, perfect timing because obviously they filmed that episode months earlier and edited and everything before the song was trending or anything. So I just thought it was like really crazy how that worked out. But anyway, back to the finale. It was cool how the snow globe and the card were then two important clues that ended up having like auditory elements that made them important, like the song from the snow globe and the sound of the card hitting the bike. And it's almost as if that was foreshadowing the very last 30 seconds where we learned that Jeanette was really innocent, but only on the technicality that she did not see Kate, but rather heard her. And in that moment, my mind was absolutely blown. Like, one part of me is like, that's such a minor thing. And the scene itself where Jeanette goes into the house, hears Kate, like puts her hand on the door, like about to open the door, and then stops and turns around and walks out. Like, it's such a calm scene. Like, there's nothing major, like where someone was hiding and it was nighttime or anything. Like, it was literally broad daylight. It just seemed super casual. But because of everything that was built up until that moment, it was so much bigger than that. And I just love that from like the cinematography element of it and the writing, where this scene, like, it wasn't this over the top dramatic thing where like Kate was in the house and Jeanette saw her and like trying to hide so Kate didn't see her. Like, it was just so subtle. Like, she walked in, she heard the sound, she walked out, you know. But because of the buildup, it was so much more. And after that moment, I just sat in front of my TV for 5 minutes saying, oh my God, what, are you kidding me? Like, what? I was just like so stunned. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, it makes sense. And it's like, you know, when you watch something and you're like, retrospectively, that really works. It all comes together, but you didn't exactly expect it. Like, I was shocked, but I also wasn't. I don't know. Like, it was just a lot for me to process. Okay, now let's talk about some other specifics, both like show general and the finale specific. So for Kate and Mallory, this was another major component from the finale, and that was like seeing that Mallory was the one who saw Kate and how Kate reacted to that. In a way, people were like kind of upset to see that when Kate thought Jeanette, who was a complete stranger, saw her and didn't do anything, Kate dragged Jeanette's name through the public eye. Meanwhile, when Kate learns that it was actually her now best friend Mallory who saw her and didn't do anything, she hugs her. It's kind of like, what? That's not fair. But I guess the picture was painted really well, where Kate definitely wanted to hurt Jeanette more because Jeanette basically took her life, whereas Mallory, in a way, was protecting Kate. And this was the type of relationship where Kate was going to like look to give her the benefit of the doubt as opposed to see it as an act of betrayal. I also loved the scene when Kate and Jeanette met up in Martin Harris's house and the truth came out. And for a split second, I thought that they might have been in it together somehow, but that wouldn't have made any sense considering like the law, like the trial and everything. But a great line was said in this little exchange was like, "You ruined my life. You stole mine. You didn't even want it." And that kind of is true. Like, obviously, Kate wasn't really happy with the way her life was going, you know, with Jamie and her friends. And she, like, that's what led her to confide in Martin, which we will get to. And then for the two of them, Kate and Mallory, dancing at the very end of the finale, I totally thought they were going to get run over or something. And then Kate kissed Mallory, and I don't know how I feel about that. If you recall, like during Kate's birthday episode when they were skating at the roller rink, I for sure got the vibe that Mallory was going to kiss Kate, and it was going to be one of those like girl friendships where maybe one of the girls like had these feelings for the other one this whole time and was like bottling it up, and then it comes to the surface and the other one was like, whoa, we're just friends, and then it's super awkward and all that, like kind of like Insatiable, if anyone watched that show. But then the kiss didn't happen, and now, though, Kate is the one that kissed her. So I don't know how I feel about it, if, like, Kate actually is, like, in love with Mallory, has feelings for her, or it's more like she was caught up in the moment and, like, the freedom and just, like, being free-spirited and stuff. But, yeah. So although with all that going on, I did think, like, what if Mallory was doing all of this, you know, like, seeing Kate, not saying anything, all, I don't know, and becoming Kate's friend, like all this aspect, and maybe to bring her down to show like loyalty to Jeanette, because like she still wanted to be her friend. And you could tell that when Jeanette and Mallory had that big fight in school, Mallory was really upset about it, like the way she walked off and was crying. Like, I could see that maybe in a way. I don't know, that would have been a really interesting twist, I think. Okay, now let's talk about Jamie, Kate, and Jeanette. Personally, Big fan of Jamie because I'm a big fan of Froy Gutierrez. I liked his character, and I specifically liked him with Jeanette. I think this was the most evident in the very first episode when the friend group went skating for Jeanette's birthday, and Ben and Jamie were talking, and Jamie basically said he was super happy, despite everything with Kate. And I just thought that the two of them, Jamie and Jeanette, for some reason, even though we didn't know much at that point, they just seem like they work together way more than Jamie and Kate did. Also early on though, in 95, I thought Jamie was going to be more dangerous and play more of a role in the story, since he was stalking Jeanette, sitting outside her house in his car, and Vince called Jeanette to warn her and stuff. I don't know. I just thought there would be more there at the end of the day. And what I liked about him is that I liked that he had a lot of depth to his character, because of course there was the aspect of, drinking his sorrows away after ruining his best friend's future career, never getting to apologize to Jeanette in 94 and waiting to do it in 95, and ultimately being put in this awkward position where he was, at least in my opinion, more in love with Jeanette when she was being dragged in the public eye because of what Kate said. Even though he was originally with Kate, I think that was definitely a tough spot to be in. Here he is, having built this new relationship with Jeanette, who he is totally in love with, only to hear this stuff and her being dragged, but a part of him still loves her so much. And that was the evident in that scene when they met up in the park. I don't know. I liked them. And so it was clear that by the end of the finale, they held hands in that one scene. So I could see them maybe getting back together. But I will say I need Kate, not Kate. I need Jeanette's hair to be normal again, because it's just too painful to see her with that horrible haircut. Okay, as for Vince and Ben, don't hate on me, but retrospectively, this plot line kind of seemed random and just filler plot, almost in a way a token gay story. It didn't really have to do with anything else in the show. The only thing I could think of is that they wanted to emphasize the culture of the 90s. And one aspect was that was how you couldn't really be openly gay, at least in high school, without having repercussions, and how difficult it was. And I thought they made such a big deal out of it, when Ben and Vince were going to that safe house kind of to be together, they made it seem they're are you ready for this? It was going to be something so intense and have to do with the larger plot line at point. And the same thing happened with Ben. It was definitely over dramatized what happened to him. When he was talking to the lawyer at the beginning and he said that he blames Jeanette for what happened to him, I thought then he was going to play more of a role in the whole ordeal. But it literally just ended up being that Jamie wanted to apologize to Jeanette, but he was drunk, so he got into a car accident, and then Ben lost football. That's not Jeanette's fault at all. It's Jamie's entirely. So, I didn't really like this plot point. It seemed kind of lame and not really relevant. Okay, now let's talk about Kate and Martin Harris. Right from the beginning, I could tell that their relationship was headed in a romantic way, but at the same time, I didn't expect it, if that makes sense at all. It was clear that because of Kate's problem at home with her mom, knowing about the affair, she confided in Martin Harris, who was kind to her, gave her advice, and, made her feel she was seen, and also, rewarded her for how mature she was, and, she liked that. So from those interactions early on, it was clear that Kate was starting to like him with her smiles and, looking forward to speaking with him and all that kind of stuff. But based on what we knew in 94 and 95, that she was in the basement and she was banging on the door to get out, and that he was eventually shot, led us to believe that it was a malicious kidnapping with an aggressive end. But then we learned that she went there willingly, and that was a total game changer. And I think the episode that did that for me specifically was episode 9. And that changed so much, because we got to see how they interacted and when they started to play Never Have I Ever. And one of the questions or Never Have I Ever statements was have you ever kissed someone older? And I thought it was going to go there romantically because, like, he was like, do you want to kiss someone much older than you? But then he kind of backed off and they said they were friends. So I, like, relaxed a little bit. Only for it to, like, flash forward a few days, and they're playing hide and seek, which also was kind of crazy because it made it seem like she was, like, running from him or hiding, and it was intense, but then it ended up being really playful. And they were just so good. That was another element of the cinematography that was really good, like, making you think one thing was about to happen, like, the cliche thing, you know, oh, she's hiding, this has to do with the kidnapping, but then it was something completely different, and they were just playing hide and seek, and she ran into his arms, and they kissed, and I was so uncomfortable. Like, oh my God. It was just like, again, I expected it, but then I let my guard down and was like, oh, they're not going to go there romantically. But then they did. And so obviously from the disclaimers before every episode, we know that this is an example of a grooming relationship. Personally, I had never heard of this concept, which is kind of surprising because I was a psych major in college. But now I understand that is the idea that he formed this bond and relationship with Kate earlier on where she felt like she could lean on him and that lured her into his house where, you know, she felt like she was going to be safe. And he took advantage of that by holding her there and not letting her leave. He was just obsessed with having this perfect little life with her in the comfort of that home where he was in control of everything. And so with this arrangement, seeing Kate in therapy was then extra interesting because, again, she is a tortured soul because part of her did love him. And I guess that's a demon that she has to deal with on a daily basis. I mean, maybe mentally, as soon as he, like, started the she started to see the aspect of control and he put her in the basement, maybe that just completely eradicated those feelings of love for him. But I mean, I think even in what was evident in that scene when he came down with the gun, like, there was that struggle and she sat with him all night. Like, there still was, like, it's almost like her feelings died for him that night. And that was, like, the last shock of the finale, finding out that Annabelle was actually a gun, which a lot of people were kind of let down about because we all thought it was going to be a person. Like, maybe Kate's, like, split personality, or maybe it was Mallory and she was in on it too. I don't know. And I was always curious how he got shot because I thought he was just aggressive and resistant when the police raided the place, so they shot him. But I was obviously shocked, I think, like everyone else, to find out that it was Kate who did that. So that's kind of crazy. But it also is very interesting how they didn't release that in the press. Like, maybe there was, like, obviously she told the police, but I don't know why it was not included in the release of the, in the media. And then the last thing I just wanted to talk about for, like, storyline specific were the parents in all this. So Jeanette's parents, this storyline was a little bit of a letdown. They made it seem like it was going to be bigger than it was, but I guess it all boiled down to was that Cindy Turner was overly concerned about her family's public image and her own. So when Jeanette started getting dragged in the media, she couldn't take it and bailed. And that put a strain on her relationship with her husband because he stayed by Jeanette's side. And then Angela came into the picture, who honestly, I really liked because she was the only person who treated Jeanette normally in 95. And then as for Kate's parents, Kate's mom straight up sucks. Like, the fact that she sent that note that said liar, first of all, it reminded me of Awkward and, like, the storyline, if anyone's seen that, like, I think in the first season. And then second of all, like, I thought Cindy Turner was bad, but Joy Wallace is so much worse. I mean, the fact that then she denied the accusation of having an affair and made Kate seem crazy and basically forced her to leave says it all. And, like, as for the fact that Kate thought her stepdad, who's basically her real dad, didn't care when, like, he, like, when him and Joy were having that argument, like, that was just really upsetting. And then finally, that scene when Kate did sneak out of the house and went to see her parents on Christmas Eve, and she saw them laughing, but, like, had she only stayed a few seconds more, it could have changed so much. Like, she could have just walked right into the house, and it would have, like, changed the whole story, I guess. But yeah, those are my specifics, like, opinions about every aspect of the show that I could think of. Now, something that I thought would be different but fun to talk about is the way that Freeform marketed Cruel Summer, because I think they did such a great job. It was so different than any other show that had been advertised before, at least of the ones I've seen. And I think that was definitely because of the pandemic. So the show premiered, I think, in mid or late April. So that is when restrictions were starting to be lifted, at least in the US. And people were, you know, leaving the house and doing more things, which of course meant that they might not be watching as much TV as before. And so with that being the case, Freeform had to figure out a way to entice people to watch their show, like to stay in and watch despite, you know, things opening up and people wanting to be social after this whole year of being like locked up in their house. So what they did was this week-long marketing campaign for the week that the show premiered, where they posted about these kind of experiential activations on Instagram to get people intrigued with the show. Now, I only paid attention to these because I want to pursue a career in like marketing and events in the entertainment world, like specifically promoting TV shows and movies using events and activations and like pop-up promotion things. So this was right up my alley. And if like I were ever asked in an interview about like an example of a campaign that I thought was really brilliant, this is the one I would lead with. So these experiential activations, which are basically those, you know, sometimes like you're, let's say in New York City, they have like a pop-up and you see like a brand doing some kind of little event in a park or something, like those are what's called an activation, where it's something you can get free stuff and you're like trying to promote the brand and you can experience something, like whether it's a photo booth or just some kind of fun activity. So these things they did were basically partnership events with global brands to promote both the brands and get those brands business while also promoting Cruel Summer and wanting, like trying to get people to watch the show. So some of the promotions included specials where if you were like one of the first like 50 or 10 or some number person, like the first 50 people at a certain place, you would get some free item. So one day they partnered with Dippin' Dots and they had like a special flavor. So if you were like one of the first 50, you could get a free cup of the new Cruel Summer flavor. And then they were also trying to use the 90s vibe of the show to entice people, since of course that aesthetic is very in. So they partnered with a lot of brands that had 90s elements. So they did a partnership with this big record store in Los Angeles where you got a free record, since that was obviously big in the 90s. Another day they did a promotion with Steve Madden where if you were like one of the first 10 people at select Steve Madden's across the country, you could get a pair of free black chunky sandals, which were very in the 90s. And then the last thing of the event was like a free, like of the campaign, was a free skating event at this big roller rink in Los Angeles. And obviously, because, you know, roller skating was back then and was a part of the show as well. I obviously didn't go because I'm not in California, but I thought that was a very cool idea. And it was just like a cool marketing campaign to get people interested about the shows, like collaborating with these well-known brands and getting people free stuff, you know, because everyone loves free stuff. And then the other aspect of like the marketing, I guess, for the show that I thought was really cool was the way that they organized the premiere. So normally they would have had this big red carpet event, invited all the cast and like other important people in Hollywood and like people of the press and the media. But because of the pandemic, that couldn't happen. So instead, they had an alternate premiere at a hotel where they gave all their guests a room with a little balcony that overlooked like the golf course or some open space with like a lot of greenery. And they then had this giant inflatable screen to play the first two episodes, I guess. And so people could watch and enjoy it collectively, but also like individually on their own little balcony and, you know, safely. And so then they also gave guests like their own little swag bag with Cruel Summer branded stuff, as well as just general trend things from the 90s. So whether it was like candy and snacks and food from the 90s, or like butterfly clips and like those chokers and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And I actually learned about this campaign or like this event from Adeline Kane's TikTok, because she made a video about the Cruel Summer premiere and her experience, and saying how she wishes that all events were like this, because she got all the free stuff and food and got to have the experience without actually having to speak to anybody. So it was like, for social anxiety, it's like, yay. So yeah, I don't know if you guys are interested in that. Hopefully that wasn't a boring segment of the podcast. I just thought it was something different and really cool, because I've said cool a million times. Now something I wanted to talk about, which was really fun and something that made the show, I think, so different from a lot of other shows, were the theories. So I wanted to talk about some of the theories that I had, as well as the ones that I had read over the course of the show, because some of them are just so genius. Now, none of these theories did come true entirely, but they did have some elements of them that were true in the end. So the best theory, in my opinion, was one I heard on TikTok, and that was that both Jeanette and Kate were telling the truth, but it was their truth, meaning it was what they thought to be true. And so in this theory, it all came down to the basement where Kate was. And the idea was going to be that Kate was behind the mirror, and it was a one-sided two-way mirror from Kate's perspective, meaning that Kate would be on that side of the mirror where she could see, and like she was there and she could see both ways, and Jeanette would have come down the stairs and be like, you know, looking at the mirror, and Kate would be seeing Jeanette and think that, and like making eye contact with her, thinking Jeanette could see her, but really on Jeanette's side it was just a one-sided mirror, so Jeanette would just be seeing herself. So the theory is that Kate is telling the truth, saying that she saw Jeanette and Jeanette saw her, but Jeanette is also telling the truth in that Jeanette didn't see Kate. And the ultimate thing that like locked in this theory was that the tagline for the show, or at least like, you know, what's on the poster, is the truth is what you is you or excuse me the truth is as you see it, meaning it's whatever you think you see. So I guess elements of that concept did still match the current finale, because Kate thought she saw Jeanette, but it ended up being Mallory. So yeah. Then a theory that I had was that maybe Sydney Turner was going to have something to do with it, because it was clear that Jeanette's mom was the one, you know, pushing Jeanette to feel this need to be popular. You know, she was really excited when she got her braces off and she wanted her to wear contacts, and she told her that it's okay to, like for best friends to drift apart. Like, you don't have to stay best friends with Mallory. And, you know, she said that because, of course, she knew Mallory wasn't cool and popular, and she wanted her daughter to be like how she was when she was in high school. So I thought maybe Cindy would have gone to the house for some reason, which was unclear, and she saw Kate or heard Kate, and maybe Kate didn't see exactly what the audience saw, but you know, it was just a glimpse of Cindy, and maybe she thought it was Jeanette because they're mother-daughter and they look alike. And then Cindy wanted Jeanette to be popular so badly, and now that she had that, she wasn't going to let anything stop that. So she didn't say anything about Kate, because obviously, had Kate been found, Jeanette's popularity would be history. But then, of course, Kate would end up being found and say that she saw Jeanette, and Cindy would be a horrible mother and let her daughter take the blame for it. And then, you know, Cindy would not tell the truth, because she didn't want to face her daughter, and like how Jeanette would have been like, you let me be dragged through the public when it was you all this time and stuff like that. And she couldn't face the town scrutiny, so she just left town. I don't know. That was a theory I had. And so then that kind of leaves the last thing to discuss in the podcast is, what's going to happen in season two? Because Cruel Summer has officially been renewed for season two. And that doesn't surprise me, because the way that the show was received was just absolutely incredible. I mentioned it in part one, but I read that this show was actually Freeform's number one debut series, meaning that the amount of people who watch Cruel Summer was the most amount of viewers Freeform has ever had for a show's first season. And that is truly impressive and well-deserved, but it brings me to a downside, because when we were all watching this, people were so into it because they had all these questions and theories of the mystery. And at the same time, though, people were concerned, thinking like they had so many questions while watching and they're like, we're never going to get answers. Like, they thought it was going to be like Pretty Little Liars in that sense. And like, don't get me wrong, I loved the show. But there were definitely some episodes here and there that just felt like filler episodes, and they didn't really give us anything except for, like, you know, maybe the last few minutes of the show. And so that was like making me believe, okay, we're not going to get all of our questions answered. But with that in mind, you know, you have to remember that TV shows are about characters. And yeah, you have to have a hooking plot, which Cruel Summer definitely does. But part of what makes the plot intriguing is that you're supposed to develop these, like, attachments and connections to characters and be invested in their story and who they are. And then from there, you're going to have these hopes for what's going to happen in the grand scheme of the show's plot and how the characters are going to play a role in that. So with that being said, you know, that's why there are always filler episodes here and there. But my point is, by the end of the season, I thought we would have some of our questions answered, but not all of them. And we would also be introduced to more questions as a way to hook us for the next season. But based on the finale, they answered so much that I'm kind of like, what would season two even look like? Like, yeah, they revealed all the details of what actually happened, and we see Jeanette get away with it. So what are they going to do? Just have us see Jeanette, like, continue to be guilty and maybe have the truth come out? But I feel like they can't do that, because they already had Jeanette be dragged through and made it seem like she was guilty, but then they deemed her innocent in the public eye. So it would just undo everything of the first season and in a way be redundant of accusing her. So I don't know. That's why I've read that then some people think that they might just do a whole new mystery with a new cast, like an anthology series, where the different seasons have nothing to do with each other. Now, personally, I don't want that, because I definitely got super attached to these characters and their specific stories. And I think there's still, like, I want to see more, like, you know, exactly when and how Jamie and Jeanette started dating, what happens now, like, what happens now after this between Mallory and Kate, and ultimately, like, how does Jeanette continue to live with herself with everything that happened? And honestly, like, I have so much faith in the writers of Cruel Summer, since they did such a great job with the story and the cinematography, that I think they could honestly, like, come up with a unique way to extend the story and not just pick a new town with a new story, because I think that would just be more of the same. Like, don't get me wrong, season one was great. But it's kind of like you loved it so much because it was so new and different and, like, unlike anything else. So if they just had season two with another small town with another type of mystery, it's kind of like, what's the point? Like, you know, you already succeeded. Like, yeah, you succeeded, but we already saw that. We don't want another one. But I'm not really sure. I've read that, like, the producers or the people working on the show, they said, like, season two is wide open. They don't know what they're going to do. So, like, they haven't said if they're going to go with the same cast or going to do anthology. All they said is it's wide open. So we're just going to have to wait and see, I guess. But honestly, I was so blown away with this show, and I hope that season two is connected to this story, or if they do a new mystery, I like the cast just as much, because I feel like the cast was a big part that got me into watching the show. And I just think that, like, they could do such great things. Like, this is my new favorite show, and I can't believe I'm gonna have to wait a year to watch it again. But at the same time, you know, most of our questions were answered, so we're not left, like, on the hook. So it's not like we really know what to expect. So that's, like, you know, part of, I guess, a good thing. Usually, like, unlike other shows where you're, like, desperately waiting to see what's going to happen. But otherwise, I hope you guys loved it just as much as I did, and you found some comfort in listening to my opinions and theories and everything. So if you like more of my thoughts and stuff, then make sure to subscribe to my podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate, review, like especially leave a review. I would love to read feedback of what you guys think. Also, if you're not already following me, please do so at Not So Critically Acclaimed, both on Instagram and TikTok. I post on there daily. There's also a Not So Critically Acclaimed suggestion form in the link in my bio where you can suggest all sorts of things for like the platform of Not So Critically Acclaimed. So you can suggest video ideas for Instagram reels or TikToks or even YouTube videos, as well as ideas for the podcast if there's a new show you want me to talk about or a movie list or something like that. So you should check that out as well. But otherwise, that's it for the Not So Critically Acclaimed podcast. And I'll be back next week with another episode. So thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.